Moncrief on News Talk.
Walter Rauf was a former SS officer who held the grim distinction of being in charge of mobile gas chambers in Nazi Germany. Augusto Pinochet was, obviously, as you know, the brutal dictator of Chile. Yet the stories of the two men intertwine not just with each other, but with the author Philippe Sands, whose latest book is entitled 38 Londres Street, On Impunity, Pinochet in England and a Nazi in Patagonia. Philippe, good afternoon.
Lovely to be with you, Sean.
Could we start with Pinochet and your connections with him? You've met him.
Well, I haven't met him, but I was asked by his lawyers to be one of his counsel, should I say, one of his barristers back in October 1998 when he was arrested in London, charged with crimes against humanity and genocide. He wanted to argue that he was completely immune from the jurisdiction of the English courts, and they wanted to put together a group of lawyers. I was approached. I would have done it, but my wife said she'd divorce me if I did the case, so I turned it down.
Okay, yeah. And how did that case end up, actually? What was the resolution
of the
case?
It was a long and convoluted issue. And in the end, they House of Lords in London, and I was involved for an organisation called Human Rights Watch, so on the other side, succeeded in persuading the judges of the House of Lords that he had no complete entitlement to immunity. And on that basis, Jack Straw, the then British Home Secretary, said he could be extradited to Madrid to stand trial for mass murder. And then there were intervening events that caused him to be sent back early to Santiago in Chile, after he'd spent 503 days incarcerated in Britain. And one of the two stories in my book is to explore what really happened to allow him to go back to Chile. Basically, to cut to the chase, was there a deal between Britain and Chile?
Mm. And when he was being held in Britain, certain figures in the British political establishment were viewed him quite benignly, indeed kind of supported him.
Indeed. Margaret Thatcher, Norman Lamont, amongst others, strongly called for his release. Lady Thatcher apparently bombarded the British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, with requests for him to be sent back to Chile. Those fell on deaf ears until right at the end, when in fact he was released early. He was not sent to Madrid, and he ended up back in Santiago, where he was stripped of his immunity.
Yeah. Now, Walter Rauf, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his surname
correctly. You are indeed.
Oh, right. Okay. So what's your family connection to him?
Well, it's a little bit of background. This was a character who in 1937 joined the SS, the Nazi Party, and was hired by Heinrich Himmler and Reinhard Heydrich to operate a series of vans, mobile vans, that were kitted out to be able to kill people in groups of 50 by gassing them to death. And hundreds of thousands of people were killed in that group. One of the people actually who was killed, I only discovered this in writing the book, was my mum's 12-year-old cousin in about 1941. And so that made it a more personal side of the story. But he then escapes at the end of the war, ends up in Damascus, Syria. And from there, he flees to South America, starts off as a motor mechanic working for Mercedes-Benz in Quito, Ecuador. And while in Ecuador, he and Mrs. Rauf meet a charming Chilean couple who say, "You're in the wrong country. You should head to Chile, where we like people like you." That couple and their friends were, in fact, Mr. and Mrs. Pinochet. And so I did establish straight away an early connection from 1955, and the story really takes off from there.
Yeah. Now, and when he moved to Chile, ostensibly, what was his job?
Ah, he had a wonderful job. So he moves to the southernmost town in the entire world. It's called Punta Arenas. It's in southern Patagonia, the Chilean part of Patagonia, right close to the Antarctic, 1,000,000 miles from anywhere. And there he becomes the manager of a king crab cannery, catching giant crabs, gouging the meat out, putting the meat in tins and sending it off to Europe and other places for export. And actually, I've met quite a few of the really lovely ladies now in their 80s who worked with him on the production line in the early 1960s, who remember him well.
Do they remember him fondly?
They remember him with a wry smile, I would say. They all knew what he'd done. Jokes would be cracked about gas ovens and other things. He would teach them how to make sure that legs weren't sticking out from the tins of crabs, so that they were packed nice and tight. One of them said to me, yes, he sure knew how to deal with that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't say it was fondly. They knew he was a decent boss. They were a bit scared of him. And then in 1963, all hell broke loose when the West German government asked for him to be extradited to West Germany to stand trial for genocide and mass murder. But that extradition failed because Chile had a 15-year statute of limitations. So he goes back to his job as the manager of the King Crab Cannery.
Mm. Now, was that his only job, as far as anyone knows?
Oh, no. He does his job in the King Crab Cannery for about 10 years. And then, miracle of miracles, on September the 11th, 1973, the other September the 11th, his mate from Quito, Ecuador, Augusto Pinochet, becomes head of the military junta. And what I encountered while I was doing the research was a lot of rumours about whether or not Pinochet asked him to resume his old job, shall we say, and work with his intelligence service, the DINA. I spent 8 years tracking down individuals who worked with Pinochet, and in the end, a couple of former DINA agents, people who had been involved in acts of mass killing, directly or indirectly, spilled the beans. They recognized Walter Rauf, and they confirmed that he had taken on another job, this time operating not gas vans, but refrigerated vans from another fishery in another town called San Antonio. And those refrigerated vans, I'm very sorry to say, it's a terrible story, were then used to transport detainees and dispose of bodies. So in essence, 35 years after he'd done his first job in, you know, across Germany and across Europe, he resumes a similar occupation, shall we say, in South America. Terrible story.
And 38 Londres Street was the location for torture.
Yes, it was. And this is, if any of your listeners have been to Santiago, they have probably walked down the street. It's right in the centre of Santiago, close to the presidential palace. It's called London Street, Londres Street, and number 38 was the Socialist Party headquarters. In September 73, the Pinochet regime expropriated it, turned it into a detention and interrogation and torture centre. And then what happened was that one of the individuals who was being interrogated there in July 1974 recognised his interrogator as Walter Rauf. And from that, my story begins to take off. That's why the title of the book is 38 Londres Street.
Mm. Is it clear what Rauf's motivations were in, if you like, going back into this line of work? Maybe he wasn't given an option. Maybe he liked it.
Oh, he liked it. Oh, yes. No, he was not a pleasant character. Although I've come to know his grandson, who did say he was a lovely granddad. They'd play cards together and he taught him how to smoke. Actually, the answer, Sean, to your question is very simple. It was a bitter hatred of communists and leftists and trade unionists. And Rauf had no compunction eliminating these people. This we know because I've managed to get my paws on a set of his letters home to his sister in West Germany from the 1970s, where he alludes to his hatred of certain categories of people. And he describes how after the coup d'etat in Chile, he writes to his sister, "I'm like a protected monument." He's now being looked after and well-treated and has resumed his dastardly tasks.
Yeah. Now, all the time then, from the time he entered Chile, did he ever leave it again?
Oh, gosh, he did. I mean, you literally couldn't invent this Cold War kind of story. So the first thing that was unbelievable, well, there are many things that are unbelievable about this story, but one is that whilst hunting him for mass murder, one part of the West German government, another part of the West German government, the secret service called the BND, has actually recruited him as a secret agent in South America, reporting to the West German government. And in that capacity, almost unbelievably, he travels back to West Germany in his own name, Walter Routh. And he actually lands for the first time in 1962 on the very day that the arrest of Adolf Eichmann is being reported. And his wife gets a bit antsy because the newspapers are full of articles about Adolf Eichmann. And one of the articles, you literally couldn't invent this, even mentions Eichmann's work with Walter Routh. But Routh tells his wife, no, 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 darling, we're completely protected. We're working for the West German government now. Everything will be fine, as it was until the following year when he was arrested in southern Chile.
Now, and I think this is another family connection there. Who was Carmela Soria?
Well, you know, Sean, you start on these tasks of writing these books, and those of your many wonderful readers who've read East West Street and The Rat Line will know the coincidences are unbelievable. So this is part of a trilogy, East West Street, The Rat Line, 38 Londres Street. When The Rat Line was published in Spain in February 2021, I get a message from my editor in Spain, lovely Sylvia, and she says there's a Spanish prosecutor who wants to be in touch with me because he has things to tell me about the Pinochet case. We do a long Zoom. It's over during COVID times. He tells me that they wanted to start the case against Pinochet with a Spanish victim, and he chooses one Spanish victim called Carmelo Soria, who is the head of the UN office in Santiago. Carmelo Soria was disappeared on the 14th of July, 1976. His body was found a few days later. He had been murdered by the Pinochet regime, although the regime denied it. He's a famous person in Chile because his brother is the publisher of the great Chilean poet Pablo Neruda. And so the Spaniards take the case of Carmelo Soria to start the entire proceedings that ended up 2 years later with Pinochet being arrested in London. I told my mother-in-law this story. Actually, I was in Devon staying with her. She's actually Spanish. She was a refugee from the Spanish Civil War. And when I'm telling her the story, as I've told it to you, she says to me, what was the name of that Spanish gentleman you mentioned whose murder caused the whole Pinochet case to be brought? And I say, Soria, Carmelo Soria. And she looks at me very sweetly. She's in her late 80s, wonderful lady. And she says to me, ah, yes, of course, cousin Carmelo. I'd forgotten about him. There was a whole kerfuffle in the 1970s when he disappeared and then his body was found. So essentially, he's family. And of course, within a few days, I was back in Chile and I was meeting with my newfound Chilean family who were at the heart of the whole Pinochet case. It was sort of miraculous.
Yeah. The fact that neither of these men really, saw any sort of justice, is that disappointing for you when you're writing a story really, like this?
Yeah, that's really what the case is about. The case is about impunity. And the book, the subtitle is Impunity. And in fact, Pinochet, so I'll slight spoiler alert here. Pinochet goes back early, should we say, to Chile. But there is a deal between the Chileans and the British. In fact, this does have an Irish element in this sense. On the Chilean side, the deal was brokered by a diplomat called Christian Tolosa. On the UK side, his counterpart was one Jonathan Powell, who will be known to you as the architect of the Good Friday Agreement, a person, I think, of great integrity and decency. I interviewed him for the book. He confirmed everything. But the deal that they agreed was that when Pinochet goes back, he will be stripped of his immunity and he will face investigation. So he is investigated. He is indicted. And when he dies in 2006, he is under house arrest and pretty much a broken individual. He can't walk the streets of his own country. So it's a story of partial impunity. In the case of Routh, I'm afraid it's really pretty much total impunity, although he worried to the end of his days that he would face the fate of Adolf Eichmann and that he would be abducted or assassinated. And in fact, as I describe in the book, he very nearly was assassinated, but he was saved by his ferocious Alsatian hound, Rex, who'd been given to him by the owner of the King Crab Cannery a few years earlier as a parting gift. So, yes, a sort of tale of impunity, but the principle is established by the Pinochet case. If you're a head of state and you do nasty things, you can expect the tap on the shoulder if you travel and you are out of office. That's the significance of the case.
Yeah, the Alsatian. He's a Nazi from central casting, really, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
when you write about, and you've, as you say, you've written three books on this subject matter in general, has it affected your feeling about human beings? Can human beings be just evil, or even in such twisted circumstances, do they somehow manage to tell themselves they're fighting the good fight or they're doing the right thing?
That's a really big question, Sean. And it's a question, I mean, I'm coming to Ireland a few times in the next few weeks. I'm going to be there next week giving the Daniel O'Connell lecture in the Intercourt. And then I'll be back for the Festival of Ideas at Boris House. And one of the things I love about my conversations with you and with Irish readers is the attention to detail on these kinds of things. At the end of the day, I feel it's too simple to describe someone just as a monster. I mean, Auguste Pinochet did monstrous things. Walter Rauf did monstrous things. The characters from my earlier books did monstrous things. But if you meet members of the family, they'll describe a gentle, loving soul, someone who is capable of love and decency. And I think the reality is that these characters who do terrible things have a double face. They are able to show love and kindness and generosity and humanity in one direction, and then they have another face in which they do simply monstrous things. And one of the things I've always wanted to do in my books is portray people sort of in the round. So I never describe Rauf or Pinochet or Hans Frank or Otto Wächter from my other books as monsters. They are human beings who did monstrous things, and for that should face justice. But the horrible reality is that some of these characters you might sit down and have a perfectly decent meal or a pint with in the pub and you'd feel perfectly decent bloke. In fact, the ladies down in Punta Arenas, I'm coming back to your earlier question, it's not that they were fond of him, but they said he was a decent manager. He looked after them. He treated them decently. There wasn't anger or hatred towards him. It was complex. They saw both sides of his character.
Yeah, and that was even knowing who he really was and what he'd done.
They knew everything. As one of them, Nora, told me, and another one, Maria, confirmed, they knew exactly what he had done. This is a God-bearing country. These are people who are pretty religious, know the difference between good and bad. But as the lady said to me, Philippe, you have to understand, he was our boss, our jefe, as they say in Spain, Chile. And basically, we had two things in life when we were 16, 17. We needed a job and we looked for a husband. And we just, ignored the horror stories that we heard. It had taken place long ago and far away. And we just got on with our lives. But they all knew, everybody knew what he had done.
Philippe, thank you so much for speaking with us today. Philippe Sands is the author of 38 Londres Street, On Impunity, Pinochet in England and a Nazi in Patagonia.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.